Good afternoon and welcome to Open Air, KLW's weekly magazine of most things culturally considered. I'm your host, David LaTulipe. Today we'll be delving into the world of Motown with the musical that's opening tomorrow at the Orpheum Theater here in San Francisco. One of the stars of the show, Rodney Earl Jackson Jr., is here with me. On the big show front, also at SF Playhouse, Into the Woods has been into its second or third week of production, and they're going through sometime in September with Into the Woods, the Stephen Sondheim musical. We'll hear from the director, Susie Damilano, as well as the star, Cinderella, who's playing Cinderella, Monique Hafen. She's here in studio as well. Over at the Nico and Feinstein's at the Nico, we'll hear about the show I Heart the 80s with Tony Vincent and Jessica Phillips, both of whom will be in studio to talk about that. And the ODC Music Moves Festival continues through August 24th. One of the solo concert performers will be San Jose Tycho and the Bangers. We'll hear from Franco Imperial about that production. It's a full hour. Stay with us here on KALW and Open Air. Sound of Motown soon to be pervading the air downtown in the Orpheum Theater as Motown the Musical comes to town. Rodney Earl Jackson Jr., one of the members of the 25 or so in the cast of Motown, joins me in studio. Rodney has been seen with the Bay Area Theater Company as well as on Broadway in the Book of Mormon. A San Francisco native, he went to the Ruth Asawa School of the Arts and then went on to study acting and musical theater at Carnegie Mellon in Pittsburgh. Other memorable productions and roles include Belize and Angels in America, Spring Awakening, Phantom of the Opera, among others. He's a founding member of the Bay Area Theater Company and now makes his home in beautiful Brooklyn, New York. Rodney, welcome to KLW in Open Air.
Hello, how are you doing?
Good, thanks. So this is a touring musical.
It is.
Where have you been so far?
Actually, to call this a tour would be kind of inaccurate thus far because we've only been in Chicago. We have started rehearsals March 9th in Chicago and have been there for 5 months. And tomorrow will be our opening night on our first tour stop, technically, here in San Francisco.
And then you're going elsewhere from San Francisco?
Yeah, we're here for about a month and a half, about 7 weeks-ish. Then we go to Cleveland for 2 weeks, and then where it all began, to Detroit for a whole month. And then to Des Moines and St. Louis, Kansas, places in Florida, eventually back down to L.A.,
Wow, yeah. You got to be in fighting shape for a tour like this, man.
Yes.
Boy, but it must be exciting for you to bring this to San Francisco to start off with.
Absolutely. I mean, I think so many people in my hometown have been wanting to see me on this new level, and I've been wanting to do the same, so it's pretty awesome to bring this music to this cultural city.
Mm-hmm. So you started off with some training at the Ruth Asawa School of the Arts. Is that where you got the bug bit for acting and being on stage?
I think it is a continuation of the bug biting. I started at the age of 9 or 10 in a program called San Francisco Arts Education Project under the direction of Emily Keeler, then went on to Young People's Teen Musical Theater Company at Harvey Milk under the direction of Diane Price, and then I went to SOTA. Back then, we called it SOTA, School of the Arts, and then it coined a new name, Ruth Asawa, which is pretty awesome. But yeah, I was a theater major under the direction of Philip Raher, then auditioned. I was actually going to be a doctor. I was going to go to UC Santa Cruz and study pre-med, but I don't think that's where I was meant to be. So I auditioned for Carnegie Mellon and two other schools, and I was blessed to get a full ride there. So
very nice. Yeah. So something tells me you'd have some groove in music, though, if you were in the operating room. I can see what might be on your iPod
some groove
for that.
Yeah.
Some good tunes while you're operating,
Thanks, no doubt.
Now, how did you choose Carnegie Mellon University as a goal, as a place to study?
To be quite honest, it was I auditioned for Syracuse and NYU and Carnegie Mellon. That was it because I was offered a free audition fee waiver and application fee waiver because I was low income and on scholarship for all the programs I was in. And they were the one school that gave me a full ride and everything for free. And it happened to be the best of all the schools. So I was fortunate, blessed, and so humbled that I got that opportunity because it was the number one school that I could actually go to. But it was a dream school. I was auditioning as for fun, so to speak.
Right. Yeah. It is a terrific program.
And we just won that. We're now we got an award from the Tony Awards. I forget what it's called, like the educational branch of the Tony Awards in New York is Carnegie Mellon University, which is pretty awesome too.
Nice. Well, fresh out of Carnegie, you landed quite a role.
Yeah, I was pretty blessed. I mean, I didn't even expect it. I came home to start my theater company, SF Bay Area Theater Company. And as I was doing a show last summer, I got a call from Kerry Gardner, the team at Book of Mormon, saying, "Hey, you have a job. You need to come to New York." And I was like, "Can't say no to that."
That must have been a fun show to do.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. I was actually a swing for them, so I learned every single male part in the show, all the black ones, so to speak. not the 12 white ones. I wasn't Cunningham or Price.
And so, what roles did you go on to actually perform on Broadway?
Do you really want to hear? Okay, well,
let's do it. Yeah,
I played the one who f***s the frog.
Okay, let's watch the language. But
Susie's
okay.
All right. Well, that's what their names are. Gatswana, who is the frog person.
Doer.
The person who has the maggots in his area. This is a hard show to speak of.
It is. From the creators of South Park. Yes,
from the creators of South Park. I played many roles, and they're all in Uganda, and it's a fun, loving musical for not for all ages, but for all people with personalities and humor within their lives.
Indeed.
I'll say that.
I hope to do that show again elsewhere.
Possibly.
Is that part of your repertoire, so to speak?
Now it is, yeah.
So let's talk about Motown the Musical.
Yes,
lots of rehearsal involved. In fact, we put you early on the show because you've got to go off to rehearsal.
Yes,
now.
Yes.
You must have been rehearsing this for some time. Is it just a matter of getting used to the space at the Orpheum, or what's going on?
No, I think the most complicated part of touring a show is actually familiarizing yourself with the new theater, the backstage area, because what happens on the stage is going to be pretty similar. We have to get acquainted with new hair and wig people and dressers, so that backstage traffic that our wonderful audience never gets to see is the part that is actually going to be rehearsed the most in our show.
So hair and makeup, are we talking full fro here for you?
Full fro. We have about, I want to say, over 100 wigs in the show. It's having a cast of over 25 people, and each of them having 3 wigs at minimum, there's so much hair. There's so much hair, and they're expensive. I hear that they're each about $2,000, which is pretty awesome. The quality of them, that they really care. Each division of our artistic team is very specific, and which is awesome to be a part of a show that cares about the integrity of itself.
Mm-hmm. So let's talk about the show itself. It's billed as almost like a jukebox musical, but it's a history of the whole Motown scene.
Yeah, it's pretty. I see the story as being a love story between Diana Ross and Berry Gordy, and how he came to discover and initiate this cultural phenomenon, which is the Motown label and its music. The show itself is comprised of over 65 Motown hits, such that we would all know of: Dancing in the Street, My Girl, My Guy, Science So Delivered, tons of them, lots of Jackson 5 songs. But yeah, I think that's mostly a love story about Diana Ross and Berry Gordy. But I guess it does have that jukebox quality because it has so many of the hits in it.
Mm-hmm. So of the 66 or so songs, how many are you directly involved in up front, so to speak?
Well, I sing My Girl on the show, which is pretty awesome because it's one of the most famous Temptation songs. I also sing a nice verse in I'll Be There as Jermaine Jackson in the Jackson 5.
Mm-hmm.
And a couple solos in ABC and The Love You Save also. I'm also the understudy to Marvin Gaye, who sings Stubborn Kind of Fella, Grapevine, and What's Going On.
So you've got to know the whole show pretty well, like you had to know Mormon.
Absolutely. Yeah. Which I love.
Yeah. So who you got? Who are you visiting here in San Francisco? You still have family here in San Francisco that you're staying with?
So nice. Well, I just graduated, so I get to stay in the home that I grew up in, which is really, really awesome to see my family. They're all coming tomorrow, actually.
Oh, nice.
They're trucking 20 of them down to the Orpheum Theater to see the show.
Oh, my gosh.
It's going to be wonderful.
That's nice.
Yeah.
Nice. So from here, you said you go to down to L.A., or is it?
No, that's in the spring of next year, L.A., I believe. We go to Cleveland for 2 weeks, then to Detroit for a month. Then I think, I don't know off the top of my head, but I know we go to Des Moines and St. Louis and Kansas and Philadelphia and Pittsburgh and Minneapolis, then some cities down in Florida, and then over to L.A.
Mm-hmm. Now, you're a relatively young performer. We can't, you know, the magic of radio, everyone has a very young face and personality. But was Motown a part of your growing up at all, or did you have to discover this stuff?
You know, it's funny. It definitely, yes. I didn't realize it, but it absolutely was. I guess it was just so normal. And I didn't expect to be hit by it, by this musical. But the music has always been so a part of my life. But in ways, because my parents are just playing on the record players or on the CD players or in the car all the time. And I just grew up loving the music, but I didn't realize that they were actually connected to Motown songs. I just thought, oh, that's a Supreme song or that's a Temptation song. I didn't know that they were all under this umbrella of Motown because I was a young kid who was quote-unquote ignorant to the subject, but I was just growing up loving music.
Mm-hmm. And now you're loving it probably even more. You're probably just dreaming it.
I'm loving it 8 times a week.
I was going to ask you, how many shows are involved
in
a week?
8. We do Tuesday night, Wednesday afternoon and Wednesday night, Thursday night, Friday night, Saturday night, and Sunday afternoon. And we take a nice old break Monday.
I should say.
A nice break.
How do they help you prepare for this kind of a run? I mean, that's a lot of vocal work. It's a lot of energy that you've got to project out onto stage every night and
every
week.
I'm not sure if there's any way to prepare. I think you just find a mental place within yourself to really accept that what you're doing is a muscle. We're like athletes. We're like in the Olympics every single day, except for Monday. And on that Monday, we are resting.
I was going to say, not exactly running around.
It's nice to be at home because I can go and visit my old vocal coaches. And it's always nice to brush up on my technique. I know some people are going to take dance classes here because San Francisco, the Bay Area, is a great place for those kinds of things. And I think some of the best things that you can do as a performer is to find those things outside of the theater that inspire you and keep you passionate about what you do. Or else you can get a little bored or stale or dull. And we want to make it fresh because that audience deserves a wonderful performance each night. And we're so passionate, we want to give each night also.
So that this show has a nice long run ahead of it. What's beyond Motown for you?
Beyond Motown?
Is there a beyond Motown?
Well, I'm only 23 years old, so who knows what the future holds for me. Once we go to L.A., maybe I'll stay in L.A. Who knows? Maybe move back to New York. But this is such a wonderful, we call them gigs. This is a great gig. I don't know why we want to give this up. I bet there's so many men in New York fighting to get this job right now. And so I think I'm going to stay here for a while because it's such a wonderful place to be.
That's nice to hear. That's Rodney Earl Jackson, Jr., local boy made good, coming back to a little spell here in San Francisco from Motown the Musical at the Orpheum. Rodney, we wish you a fantastic run, and let's hear what happens next. Keep in touch with us.
Thank you so much.
Sure. The Motown the Musical runs at the Orpheum through September 28th. Information at shnsf.com. Rodney Earl Jackson, among the cast of 25 or so in this musical that covers over 66 tunes of that great era. We're going to conclude with the tune that Rodney himself is going to be featured in, but we're going to hear the original cast, Broadway cast recording of My Girl.
Sunshine on a cloudy day. When it's cold outside, I've got the month away. I guess got a sweeter song than the birds in the tree. Well, I guess you say, what can make me feel this way? It's my girl.
My girl.
Talking
My Girl, indeed, one of the memorable tunes in Motown, the musical at the Orpheum Theater. Through the 28th of September, shnsf.com. Good afternoon, David Latulip with you for Open Air. Still to come, speaking of older tunes, I Heart the 80s. We'll hear about this show at Feinstein's. Tony Vincent and Jessica Phillips here to talk about that show. We'll go into the woods at SF Playhouse with the director Susie Damilano and Monique Hafen. And next, we're going to talk about a bit of drumming that's happening as part of the ODC Music Moves Festival. San Jose's Tycho and the Bangers take the stage, and I'm pleased to welcome Franco Imperial to talk about the concert. Franco has been on full-time artistic staff for San Jose Tycho since 2001 and became artistic director of the company in 2011, continues to perform Tycho nationally and internationally. Franco, welcome to Open Air.
It's great to be here. Thank you.
Sure. Well, this is part of the concert's one-night-only concerts as part of the Music Moves Festival that runs through August 24th. You're taking the stage this Sunday at 8. Now, I'm wondering, the idea behind this festival, according to Christy Bolingbroke, who was here a couple weeks ago, that Music Moves features music choices that teach us how to view dance and choreography that shows us how to listen to music. Now, how does this particular imperative fit into San Jose Tycho and the Bangers?
It's almost like they created this festival for our act, although I haven't seen the other ones. San Jose Tycho's collaboration with the Bangers has been one of a lot of movement with the Tycho choreography that we employ and how it's interpreted through the lens of DJ music as well. So folks that are checking it out, they'll see a visual feast, and they'll definitely get an audible feast as well from the soundscapes that the Bangers create and the choreography and energy that San Jose Tycho
Well,
delivers.
let's back up a little bit to hear about, just for some basics about Tycho. Is it Tycho or Tycho?
Tycho.
Tycho. Tycho drumming. So what is Tycho drumming? How does it differ from other drumming one might hear?
Yeah, Tycho is the term used for the Japanese drum, and it's also used to describe the art form itself of Tycho, which is our style is a Japanese-American style of drumming. A lot of people describe it as dancing with drums, and it's easier to describe with a video alongside, but people that come away from our concerts, they really feel the music. And what they see visually is really an energetic interpretation of that sound that they feel in their chest. So Tycho is a very dynamic art form, and there are many different styles of it. There are over 300 Tycho groups in North America today. So our style that most people see, they describe it as very, you know, heavy with choreography and the energy, or ki in Japanese is what we call it.
I was going to say, it almost fits in perfectly for a dance festival because there's so much action going on in the drumming.
Definitely, definitely. Our former artistic director, PJ Hitabayashi, who's also an NEA Heritage Fellow, she really wanted to ingrain that sense of movement and how the energy is interpreted into our signature playing.
So you've been involved with San Jose Tycho for some time now, but the group actually goes way back much further. Can you tell us a little bit about the roots of San Jose Tycho?
Yeah, you know, we just celebrated our 40th anniversary last year.
Wow.
And thank you. And the group started in the early 70s as a youth activity at the Buddhist church in Japantown in San Jose. And the members at the time were students of San Jose State, and it was during Asian American movement, civil rights movement. So their idea of forming a Tycho group was to not simply copy something that was happening in Japan, but create a voice that was one that they could use as a tool to explore their identity as Asian Americans. So how this relates to today is that they wanted to make sure that their musical signature was one that was influenced by the membership of the group and the music that they listened to. So there was R&B. Rodney would have been happy about this. There was Motown. Mm-hmm. There was jazz. And we truly try to make that fusion happen for a particular reason, because I think one of the messages they wanted to put out at the time was that what does it mean to be Japanese American? What does it mean to be Asian American? And really kind of dispel some stereotypes at the same time.
Hmm. So now you're taking Taiko in a different direction now, as you mentioned earlier, with this collaboration with the Bangers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, and I think collaboration and exploration is really in San Jose Taiko's DNA. So, you know, we received a Isadora Duncan Award for our work with Abinaya Dance Company, a Bratanatyam group, a few years ago, and we're just moving forward with, you know, what does it mean?
I was going to say mazel tov or congratulations. I don't know how to say it in Japanese. What would you say?
Oh, yeah.
How do you say congratulations?
Oh, yeah, yeah. You can just say congratulations is fine.
All right.
And I think, you know, with the collaboration of the Bangers, we really were exploring what does it mean to be a member of the San Jose arts community and represent what was going on down there, specifically in our SOFA district, where two individuals, Brian Eder and Sherry Lakey from Gallery AD down there, who are really curators of up-and-coming artists. They had been friends with the Bangers, who were local kids at the time, growing up together, and they had known of us as well. So for years, he had been putting this seed in both of our consciousness that we need to work together. And finally, it happened in 2010 at a festival called Sub-Zero, which they put on, and it's supposed to represent sort of the subculture of San Jose. And we feel that in the success of the collaboration, if we have any... if we need to attribute anything to it, it's really that we're really trying to represent San Jose and that arts community that is often, you know, sometimes overlooked.
Hmm, yeah, interesting. Yeah. So how did you first get involved with Taiko?
You know, I was just talking to John about this, and I grew up as a percussionist, as a drummer in Texas, moved out here to California.
Taiko, capital of the world.
Yeah, right? Texas, exactly. Actually, there was a Texas Tumbleweed Taiko at one point. No joke. They're not around anymore. But, you know, I had never seen anything like it. And it was a combination of music and of dance and martial arts and all these things that I really had an affinity for. So, yeah, it was kind of a no-brainer. I had to at least try it. Did not realize it would be taking over my life.
And is Taiko your sole focus now as a percussionist?
As an artistic director for the company, yes.
Mm-hmm. And on the side, maybe a little set action?
no time, really. Yeah. This job keeps me quite busy.
Yeah. So beyond the festival, what's coming up for San Jose Taiko?
We have a Midwest tour coming up in October. We'll be in Iowa and Kentucky and Indiana. And then we get to take a little break for the holidays. Mm-hmm. Oh, actually, sorry. And we'll be getting into rehearsals because we have another performance, Folsom, in Folsom, California, for the Bangers collaboration. Another presenting group has asked us to do it.
Very nice. And help me out with the website for San Jose Taiko.
San Jose Taiko is taiko.org.
T-A-I-K-O.
That's right.
.org.
That's right.
That's great. That's great. So how did Brenda Way get you involved with this particular festival? Or who was your contact for the festival, and how did you hear about this happening? This is fairly new Music Moves idea that they've got going.
Yeah, you know, my first contact was Christy, who was an amazing just force of nature for ODC. Her enthusiasm and her willingness to experiment was really what we needed for this performance. I think what we're really trying to figure out right now is, does an in-theater, you know, a performance of this collaboration, is that the best vehicle for this? And what Christy brought to the table was, you know, she really had this openness of, you know, how can the audience actually participate? How can we restage this production in some ways to make it more engaging? And we love working with Christy and all the folks at ODC. They've just all been amazing. I think one of the things Christy has been working on, and we definitely feel it as first-time collaborators with ODC, is that they really bring the art and the business together. And I know that's a mantra for Christy, and I definitely see it from every aspect of the organization that we've been in contact with.
Very Very nice. Yeah. And after this performance, you had a little bit of time off, you said, after two more performances. Is that right?
That's right. After this performance on Sunday at 8 at ODC, you know, we'll kind of decompress and see where we are with the collaboration and get prepped for next year.
Nice. That's Franco Imperial. He's the artistic director of San Jose Taiko, appearing with the Bangers as part of the Music Moves Festival this Sunday at 8. Information at odcdance.org. You did bring a track that I'm going to attempt to play here. The one that I have queued up is called Noise. I'm wondering if you could help set that up a little bit.
Sure. This is a track that the Bangers produced and put together, and it's one of the transitional tracks that we use between songs during the show. And it talks about, we've overlaid some terms that we use in Taiko called the hara, or the center of your being, which is very important. This is where our power and our balance comes from. So we're kind of overlaying these two soundscapes here.
Neat. Well, we'll look forward to it. And thanks for coming in today, Franco.
Thank you, David.
This is the hara. The hara is the middle of your body. It is your center of gravity. It is where we believe all your energy or ki comes from. This is the hara.
That's just a taste of what you'll hear with Taiko, San Jose Taiko, and the Bangers as they take the stage this Sunday at 8. As part of the Music Moves Festival, continuing through August 24th, ODC Theater, midway through the Music Moves Festival, nearly a month of diverse performances about the relationship between music and dance. A series of one-night concerts features artists Holcomb Waller and San Jose Taiko and the Bangers. For the final weekend, this festival will spotlight Namita Kapoor and Rueda Con Ritmo as part of ODC Theater's Dance and Diaspora series, and Melissa Payne Bradley and Antoine Hunter, this year's Theater Unplugged artists. Again, San Jose Taiko and the Bangers this Sunday at 8. Information at odcdance.org. Good afternoon once again. David Latulippe here for Open Air. We're going to go into the woods to finish things off in Open Air today and talk about the SF Playhouse production of Same Said Musical by Stephen Sondheim and James Lapine. But we're going to dip back to the 80s now with Tony Vincent and Jessica Phillips. The Hotel Nico San Francisco and Michael Feinstein present I Heart the 80s, an evening of 80s music featuring your favorite songs from such iconic artists as Michael Jackson, Cyndi Lauper, Bruce Springsteen, Journey, Billy Idol, and much more, as they say. We're going to talk with Tony Vincent and Jessica Phillips. Vocalist and songwriter Tony Vincent's career has already included 6 number one Billboard radio hits, as well as a recent studio project called In My Head. Originally from Albuquerque, he's now been a New Yorker since 1998 or so. He's been in touring and Broadway productions of Rent and American Idiot. And for Jesus Christ Superstar, he was featured as Simon in Lloyd Webber's remake of the film version in 2000, and then on Broadway as Judas. He sung Bohemian Rhapsody for the Queen's Golden Jubilee concert, which we'll have to talk about, and in Vegas, and was featured on NBC's The Voice as part of Team CeeLo. Tony, welcome to KALW.
Great to be here. Thank you.
And he's here with vocalist Jessica Phillips, who most recently starred opposite Raul Esparza in the Tony-nominated Best Musical Leap of Faith. Additional Broadway credits include Priscilla, Queen of the Desert, Next to Normal, the 25th anniversary revival of Jesus Christ Superstar, and The Scarlet Pimpernel. Originally a Nashville girl, away from the Broadway stage, Jessica's voice can be heard as one half of the country duo, Tenth and Carlisle. Welcome to you, Jessica.
Thank you so much.
Happy to have you here.
It's great to be here.
So how did you guys meet, first of all? Let's get that out of the way.
We met during Superstar.
Yeah.
Right? Oh, wow.
That's right.
Yeah.
Very nice.
Well, we joke that, you know, everybody in New York pretty much knows each other anyway. But we did work together on Superstar, and that was 14 years ago. Yeah.
And did you just share a love of 80s music at that point in your interaction?
I don't think we ever talked about non-theatrical material.
No, I don't think we did.
I don't think so. But I just because I came from a songwriting background, and the 80s continue to influence the way I hear music and write music, and especially like Brit pop and British rock, that will always probably, you know, kind of be my go-to influence, even though I grew up on the Beatles and that sort of thing. So,
mm-hmm. And how about you, Jessica?
Well, yeah, I mean, I was a teen in the 80s, so I though that was before iPods and earbuds, you know, I had this kind of music, which is now, you know, brings up such incredible, you know, visual pictures of my young musical life. And it was a good time. Those were fun years.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And so this show, how did you guys make this show come together then? Who's the brains and who's the brawn behind crafting the show?
Yeah, there's an organization based out of New York called Broadway Pops, and they actually have several sort of theme-focused shows that usually, if I'm not mistaken, sort of are backed by symphonies around the country as well as a global perspective. And this is the first time that this show has been sort of reduced to a very much more intimate setting. Usually it's done with a 60-plus, you know, 60-piece-plus orchestra, and it's very epic and quite large. This is the first time that it's ever been in a kind of cabaret setting like this.
Yeah,
so it's new for me in this situation and fresh and interesting, and it'll be interesting to see. So, you know,
it's a lot of fun. We just get up there and have a lot of fun. So,
did you guys have input as to what tunes to include or which ones to?
Because I was sort of the front end of the creation process. I tried to push as much English music as I could, but I could only get about 35-40% in there. But yeah, I was kind of at the initial, you know, process. And then Jessica came on after the show was kind of already fleshed out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And that sort of thing. So, but it's great to be able to sing together again. It's been 13 years. So.
Well, we've got to talk about some of your larger productions of singing as part of the Queen front group kind of thing.
Yeah. Well, I had a record deal with Epic at the time and was in London doing some songwriting, and I got a call from Bernie Telsey's agency, who's a big casting agency in New York City, who I originally worked with because I was in Rent. And they said, you know what, Queen are doing this musical, and we're taking auditions. And, you know, basically at that point, they were videoing auditions in New York and sending them over to London. I coincidentally just happened to be there at the time. It was one of those right place, right time kind of situations. And I opened their musical, We Will Rock You, on the West End 13 years ago. And so that became my initial involvement with Queen, and sort of to push the show's popularity, because we kind of got attacked pretty hard by the critics. I fronted Queen on several events, and one of those happened to be the 50th anniversary of Queen Elizabeth's tenure on the throne. So
that must have been fun.
Unbelievable. I mean, at that point, Bohemian Rhapsody really had not been sung live in its entirety. And so to do that with Queen, for the Queen, was, you know, one of those pinch yourself moments.
Yeah. Very nice. And Jessica, you've been more on the smaller theater front, not in front of millions, but nonetheless, you're training on the theater front.
No, it's true. It's true. I've been very fortunate to really make a living in New York on Broadway, and because I was born in Nashville and those country roots were pretty strong for me. I sort of began my own group in my effort to be creative and do my own thing, and so that's really where I've been focusing. But actually, in the last 2 years, I've been exclusively working on television, so that makes this event that much more exciting, because it's really nice to step back into a musical medium, having been away from it for a couple of years.
Very
especially
nice.
With this guy. So.
Well, let's hear a little bit of your lovely voice, and then we'll visit more with Jessica Phillips and Tony Vincent. This is an excerpt from Live at Joe's, Somebody Stand By Me.
Oh.
Cool.
I hear tonight this girl's gonna have her day.
Sample of the wonderful voice of Jessica Phillips from Live at Joe's Pub. She and Tony Vincent are starring in I Heart the 80s at Feinstein's at the Nikko. That show runs, let's see, it runs through the 24th of August, opens tonight at 8 o'clock.
Indeed.
So how are preparations going for this? I mean, you've rehearsed this prior to here, and is it going somewhere after this? Does it have legs, as they say?
These dates are really kind of sparse. I don't know of another that's on the calendar at the moment.
Not at the moment, but I know that they're working on, on bringing it to New York.
Yeah. So. It's an aggressive push. So we'll see.
So we'll
Time
see what
will
happens.
Tell.
Okay. What else are you guys working on then beyond this?
I have a gig in Utah around the Halloween season. I'm going to do an in-concert version of Rocky Horror. And then I'm going down to Argentina. I worked down there for a couple of years working with a group of students called Broadway Street. And they usually have pretty epic shows. So that's kind of the way my fall, winter, early winter is looking like right now.
And Jessica, talk to us a little bit about 10th and Carlisle, your country group.
Well, we're a duo, and we do most of our writing out of Nashville. We've done some writing with Larry Gatlin and some other folks down there. And mostly we're just trying to get off the ground. You know, we play a lot of cover gigs, and we are, you know, we have some singles out on iTunes. So we're just exploring and trying to find our voice. But it's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun.
Nice. And how did you guys get together then to rehearse with the... Are you living in New York? Or you just
yes,
go up
we're
to,
both New Yorkers.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Whereabouts?
We actually live...
Blocks away from each other.
20 blocks from each other.
Yeah. Didn't even know it, I don't think, till we started rehearsing this.
In Manhattan? Or,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
Nice. I was in Brooklyn.
I'm not cool enough
years.
To live in Brooklyn.
I know.
it's way too hip for me.
Hey, I had a brownstone.
See? Yeah.
I think they use the F word out there.
What are you talking about? What? You got a problem with that? Great town, boy. It really is amazing. Although you're wise to probably get away from it in August. I seem to remember certain smells of New York in August.
Smells that you never want to recall.
True enough. And you'll get a little bit of that on Market Street, actually. The more
indeed you will.
Okay.
Just in case you're missing it, just in case. Now, Tony, I need you to get us on board for our TV challenged listeners here on radio. Some basics about how the voice works and what you did for them.
So I was on the second season, and I think that there was around 400,000 actual auditioners for that season around the country.
Wow.
Yeah, and I'm including video submissions as well as physical auditions. And really, they narrow that down. I don't know how they do it. Probably with a team of several tens of hundreds of people to get it down to about 250, I believe. And then those 250 are whittled down to 128. And so from those 128, you actually get to the place of a live audition for basically getting nabbed on a team, you know, hit a buzzer's pressed or whatever. But it's very legit. And my experience was for the most part, very positive. You know, it's television, so there's always an element of scriptedness, even in reality-based television. But I have a relationship with CeeLo Green that I never had planned on before. I have the utmost respect for him as an artist, and so you know, those they had a really they just have a supreme bucket of talent that auditions for that show. People that already have careers beforehand, you know, that are gifted songwriters and gifted vocalists and musicians in their own right. So it was really nice to be able to be a part of a group of individuals during that season, specifically that this was just kind of a next step in their career. There was not a lot of, you know, starry-eyed, dreamy kind of dialogue for the most part. It was very, you know, a lot of us had been on the road before. We'd been, you know, hitting the street and writing songs for years. So this was just a kind of a neat experience to come together and you know, give it our best shot.
And some great contacts to keep in touch with, sure.
Not a bad situation, absolutely. And, you know, 17 million people that see your face each week is not a bad, you know, bad situation for your career.
Your Facebook account must be busted.
It definitely upped the Twitter count. Yeah, the Twitter followers, for sure.
That's Tony Vincent. He's starring along with Jessica Phillips in I Heart the 80s, Feinstein's at the Nikko through the 24th. Information at ticketweb.com. Tony, we're going to go out with a little bit of your music. Before we do that, let's get back to the show just a little bit. Is there a favorite tune that you guys came upon that you rediscovered as part of this process of I Heart the 80s?
Jess, do you want to answer that first?
Well, you know, I'm going to go with the sappy one. You know, I'm going with Dirty Dancing.
Of course.
Right. So we do the duet from Dirty Dancing. I Had the Time of My Life. And, I mean, I really get lost in that song. Yeah. I love it. It's pretty timeless.
It is. I mean, it's a great... I mean, that melody is it's unforgivable. It's
right. Should really we tell them about the lift?
No, we should surprise them.
Okay.
The lift. I think, you know, I mean, I'm a David Bowie fan, so... singing Let's Dance is probably my highlight of the night.
Nice.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. We'll have to leave the... do you try to imitate those artists or your own voices that you're
Well, she does a great Patrick Swayze impersonation.
Tony, you're terrible. No, I mean, especially... I think we both... the songs are strong. They're strongly written, and they're fun, and they're full of energy and verve. And I think, you know, we just sing them the way we know how to sing, and they work. They pop, I think. I'll speak for Tony.
She's right. She's
very right. Very nice. Information at ticketweb.com for this. Have a great run with this.
Thank you
Thanks
very much.
So much.
It's great to
Tony,
great
set
to be here.
Me up, though, for one of the cuts that we have brought from you.
Yeah, I think one of them is a duet from the Queen musical We Will Rock You of Under Pressure. Another David Bowie connection. Here we go.
There we go.
We're a threat. A virus on their hard drive, and they won't give up until they've pointed their little arrow at us
and dragged us to trash.
Fresh off, push it down on me, press it down on you, no manners for.
And that inelegant cut ending came from yours truly, David Latsuli, pushing many buttons here on KALW as part of our show here for a parade of guests on Open Air today. As we continue our parade, that was Tony Vincent and We Will Rock You, the Queen musical. He's starring with Jessica Phillips at Feinstein's at the Nikko through the 24th. Hotel Nikko's at 222 Mason Street, San Francisco, where not too far away from them is the SF Playhouse, who's presenting Into the Woods now through September 6th. Susie DiMilano is co-founder, along with husband Bill English, who we've talked to several times, and producing director of the San Francisco Playhouse, where she directed the recent fantastic Behanding in Spokane, as well as Den of Thieves, Wirehead, and the West Coast premieres of Honey Brown Eyes, Dead Man's Cell Phone, Coronado, The Mystery Plays, Roulette, and the world premiere of Daniel Heath's 7 Days. As an actor, actress, she has a five-time recipient of the Bay Area Theater Critics Circle Award for Principal Female Performance, and she has also appeared in a number of other SF Playhouse productions. Welcome to you, Susie.
Thank you very much.
She's joined by Cinderella. Or in reality, the actress who plays Cinderella in Into the Woods, Monique Hafen, back for her third summer at SF Playhouse, for her third summer in a row. Last summer, she was Guinevere in their terrific production of Camelot. And before that, I'm afraid I missed this one, she was Eliza Doolittle in My Fair Lady, both roles earning her Bay Area Theater Critics Circle Best Actress Awards. She's also worked at San Jose Stage Company in productions of the Threepenny Opera and Avenue Q, at San Jose Rep and Center Rep. Monique, welcome to you.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Of course. Well, a Sondheim musical in the summer, what more could one ask for? It's here in San Francisco. It's a great way to have something going on in the summer.
Oh yeah, it's the best. It's been received really well. It's selling out every single show, and thank God we're doing a long run of it so that everyone gets to come see it.
And Monique, how did you first get in? I mean, you're a return customer to SF Playhouse, but did you have to re-audition for this role?
I did not have to audition for this one. The first time I worked at the SF Playhouse, Susie actually played my mother in Harper Regan, and it was a non-singing role. I was playing a British girl, contemporary play, and Bill just happened to hear me singing backstage, and he said, well, I think I found my Eliza Doolittle, and they keep having me back, which
like,
is
oh,
the...
I think I found my Guinevere. Oh, yeah, I think I found my Cinderella.
She keeps trying to move away, and you keep bringing her back.
Yeah.
Well, in order to get some folks on board with the basic premise of the musical, let's hear a little bit from the introduction to the show so we get an idea of what's going on. Then we'll visit more with Susie DiMilano and Monique Hafen.
Once upon a time,
I wish
in a far-off kingdom,
more than any,
lived a fair maiden,
more than life,
a sad young lad,
more than true,
I wish, and a childless baker,
more than life,
I wish, with his wife,
more than anything,
more than the moon,
I wish,
the king is giving a festival,
more than life,
I wish to go to the festival,
more than riches,
I wish my cow would give us some milk,
more than anything,
I wish we had a choice,
I want a choice,
I wish to go to the festival,
I wish we might have a child,
I wish.
You wish to go to the festival?
The poor girl's mother had died.
You, Cinderella, the festival? We wish to go to the festival, the festival, the king's festival.
And her father had taken for his new wife
the festival.
A woman with two daughters of her own.
Look at your nails.
Look at your dress.
People would laugh at you.
Nevertheless,
she still wants to go to the festival and dance before the priest.
All three were beautiful of face, but vile and black of heart. Jack, on the other hand, had no father, and his mother?
I wish.
Well, she was not quite beautiful.
I wish my son were not a fool. I wish my house was not a mess. I wish the cow was full of milk. I wish the walls were full of gold. I wish a lot of things. You foolish child! What in heaven's name are you doing with a cow inside the house?
A warm environment might be just what Milky White needs to produce his milk.
It's a she! How many times must I tell you? Only she's can give milk.
Just a touch of what's happening at the very start of Into the Woods. Quite an adventure into the Brothers Grimm and a diversion, to say the least.
Yeah, it's amazing. And you can tell just by that introduction, which it weaves an incredible tapestry between several of the Grimm fairy tales of Little Red Riding Hood, Jack and the Beanstalk, Cinderella, and Rapunzel. And it adds, they created their own of the baker and his wife who are trying to have a baby. And the baker's family has been cursed by a witch. And so the play is pretty much trying to lift the curse. Mm-hmm. And all the other characters get brought into it.
Well, we heard a little bit of our Cinderella here. Let's hear a bit about at least verbally, about some of the rest of the cast. The witch was memorably played on Broadway originally by Bernadette Peters. Who's your witch in San Francisco?
Oh, our witch is Sophia Fredericks, and she worked with us when we opened our big, beautiful new theater on Post Street when we did Bloody Bloody Andrew Jackson.
And also a fantastic show. I tell you, SF Playhouse, the place to go.
Yeah. She's amazing. I mean, I think that she came into the room to audition, and I, as a last, on the last day of auditions, and she's a bit younger than one might cast for the witch, but she came in, and some actors can just change the energy of the room, and that's what she did when she sang Last Midnight, and she continues to do it every single night.
Yeah, she blows me away every single night. She's even just the first read-through, I remember sitting there and going, holy moly.
Yeah, she set the bar.
She's killing it every night.
Nice. And so this is a long run for this. How do you keep the energy going for such a long run?
With a show like this, it's easy, really. It's so beautifully written. And we have such a stellar cast of players who bring different energies every night and keep it fresh. And they're fun to play with. So,
yeah, I think the best thing is that the ensemble loves each other, and that, and you can tell, and it just brings to, it lifts the magic of the performance.
Well, you're no stranger to working with the larger casts, so part of this is a choreography of bodies, isn't it, Susie?
Yes, and actually this is a pretty, I think it might be one of the biggest casts we've had. It's 16 people backstage plus a 7-piece band, so there's 23 people backstage at all times.
Plus a cow.
And a cow. That's
she, the she cow.
Yes, it's a cow. She's the she.
So, Monique, tell us about your character, Cinderella. It's not just the Disney version of Cinderella, is it?
No, she's such a goofball and a klutz, and I love her to death. But yeah, that's one thing I came into rehearsal saying, Susie, she has to be comedic in the first act. She has to be tripping and falling and not knowing how to wear those shoes or be comfortable in a gown. So that's what I've tried to bring to the character as much as possible. And then she has such a heart, too, that I think is there throughout, and she really finds her own by the end of the show.
Very nice. But with Sondheim musical, book by James Lapine, there's a bit of a darkness to it, isn't there?
Yeah, that's what really makes it wonderful. Well, that said, Grimm's fairy tales are quite dark.
Yes.
Disney took the fairy tales and brought a utopian
1950s
slant to them all to make them all happy endings. But the Grimms really laid it out there much more seriously, and Sondheim continues in that vein. And what's great about it is Act 1 is all about happily ever after, and Act 2 is what happens after happily ever after. And that's where your heart will just explode with feeling, because I think no matter what age you are, there's some place you're going to tap into. Mm-hmm. And I think Monique, she sings a song called No One Is Alone with three of the other cast members, with Jack, the baker, and Little Red. And it's one of the most beautiful moments and harmonies on stage ever. And I look around the audience when that plays, and there is just not a dry eye.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Monique, could you share with us some of that lyric? We're going to hear it shortly from the Broadway cast revival, but share with us some of the lyric that just really gets tugs at the heart.
Cinderella's starts a song comforting Little Red, and Little Red has lost her mother and her grandma and says, you know, mother cannot guide you. Now you're on your own. Only me beside you. Still, you're not alone. And the song continues, and it talks about building your own community and finding out what's right in your own heart. And people make mistakes. Honor their mistakes. Fight for their mistakes. Witches can be right. Giants can be good. You decide what's right. You decide what's good.
Very nice. That's a tune that Monique Hafen will be singing as part of Into the Woods, currently at the SF Playhouse, sfplayhouse.org, directed by Susie Damolano. Thank you both for coming in today.
Thank you for having
us.
Thank you.
I certainly look forward to catching this, that's for sure. We are going to hear now Laura Benanti singing from the Broadway cast revival, No One Is Alone.
Cannot guide you. Now you're on your own. Only me beside you. Still, you're not alone. No one is alone. Truly, no one is alone. Sometimes people leave you halfway through the war. Others may deceive you. You decide what's good. You decide alone. But no one is alone.
I wish.
I know. Mother isn't here now.
Things, right things.
Who knows what she'd say?
Can say what's true.
Nothing's quite so clear now.
Do things, fight things.
Fear you've lost your way.
You decide,
but you are not alone. Believe me, no one is alone.
No one is alone, believe me.
Truly, you move just a finger.
Say the slightest word.
Something's bound to linger.
No one acts alone. Careful, no one is alone.
People make mistakes.
Fathers.
Mothers.
People make mistakes.
No one is alone. Susan Benanti singing that. You'll hear Jessica Hagen. Monique Hafen sing that as part of the San Francisco Playhouse production. Now through the 6th of September, information at sfplayhouse.org. A final thing on today's open air, some tickets to give away. We have 6 pair for Marilla's grand finale Saturday evening at 7:30. The fine young artists of Marilla program present scenes and arias from wonderful operas. You can hear it at Saturday, 7:30, in the Opera House with a full orchestra. 6 pair now for people that call 415-841-4134. Hear these up-and-coming artists for the Marilla Opera Program. 415-841-4134. I'm David LaTulip. You've been listening to Open Air, our weekly magazine of most things culturally considered. I thank you for listening this afternoon. And if you've got a show idea, some segment or cultural institution that you'd like featured on Open Air, send me an email, david@kalw.org. Thanks to Niels Swinkels for being artist wrangler today for the parade of characters that came through this past hour. We're so lucky here in the Bay Area to have such a great array of fine, fine artists. A reminder, too, that all of our shows here of Open Air are archived at our website, kalw.org. Thanks again for listening. We'll see you next week.